Thank you again, Ian, for your words, because your message today, I think, gives us a context in which to think about, well, how then do we relate to other faiths and religions? Should we follow Christ and Christianity, as you are suggesting, and make him known all around the world? Why not Buddha and Buddhism, or Muhammad and Islam? Is there really any difference between them when it comes down to that? So I want to tell you a famous story that was used by some people to describe the relationship between different religions. The story describes a group of men who have been blind since birth. And they come upon an elephant that's standing in front of them, and each man goes to a different side of the elephant. The first feels the large, thin ears and says, "An elephant is like a banana leaf." The second blind man grabs onto a leg and says, "No, you're wrong. An elephant is like a tree trunk." The third blind man is up front and holds on to the elephant's trunk. "No," he says, "you're both very mistaken. An elephant is like a thick snake." The fourth blind man is way back in the back and grabs that little thin tail. And he says, "No, none of you know what you're talking about. An elephant's like a rope." And so off they go, arguing about what an elephant is like, each sincerely convinced that they are right, and each certain the others are totally wrong. Now, this story is often told, and I'm sure you've heard this before, to say that people who believe their faith is correct and other religions are wrong are themselves mistaken. It suggests, when you interpret it in this way, that all religions are like the blind men describing the elephant. They have a piece of truth, but not the whole truth. So all religions are just describing the same God in different ways. Some conclude that all religions are basically the same despite their differences. I think the problem with this illustration, with this story, is that it says that all religions are blind. They're not like the wise Indian prince who can see the whole elephant, whereas none of the blind men know what they're really talking about. Can you hear the arrogance that comes out of this interpretation? You see, we hear it in our secular society today. In our secular world, people make similar claims that could be considered arrogant, such as, "Well, it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere." I remember being a student here in the 1970s, even before street level, Ian, and I remember in those days that a very common perspective, and it probably still is today, is that it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you are sincere. Lewis, I don't know if you hear that kind of thing being said today, but it was very common in those days. But sincerity is a very poor substitute for truth. Hitler was sincere in his desire for the perfect race based in Germanic genes and elimination of all Jews. The result of his sincerity was the murder of 6 million and another 6 million people whom he didn't agree with. Hitler was sincere, but he was wrong. Another thing that people will often say, which is somewhat arrogant, is that all religions are basically the same. And that means that they've progressed, this kind of thing has progressed in our culture to the point where today people are actually saying it doesn't matter which religion you opt for. Sometimes people say they all have similar morals. In other words, be kind to one another, tell the truth, help the weak and needy, respect other people. And when you say that kind of thing, it's actually quite attractive to the idea that all religions are basically the same, because it's telling you to be tolerant, to be nice. It's false, though, to think that people have moved from an age of intolerance to an age of tolerance. intolerance is still very much around today, and so it's important to hear from people. The truth is that every human makes judgments that one thing is better than another. Every human tolerates someone but is intolerant of another. Another thing that people often say in our secular world is that all religions lead to the same God by different paths. We also have many in society believing that religions lead to the same God. Either they're just using different names for the same God, or they have different paths to God, but believe they will all eventually get there to the same point. This is a picture of which mountain, Daniel? Do you know this one? I think you do. Leslie-Ann, we've been up it together. This is Schehallion. Hands up who's been up Schehallion before. Okay, very good. Quite a number of you. You're quite a climbing congregation, aren't you, really? Well, Schehallion's an interesting mountain because it has very different faces. I remember as a student, I would never do it today, as a student, I went up with some medics and we came down the sharp, steep side on ice axes, leaning back on our ice axes. It was terrifying. This is the gentle route up. This is the gentle route that I took some time ago. Can we just stay on it for a second, please? That's it, the other one here. And you get underneath some of that snow, you get scree, lots of rock. There's another route up which is a little more tougher. You can take different paths. But anyway, here's the point. It's like religions are all different ways up the same mountain. Some are quick and some seem to wander endlessly around it. Some are easy and some are hard. But eventually, all the paths lead to the top of the mountain. The same is true, they say, of religions in the world. While they seem to do different things, the end result is that they will all get people to God. In university education today, the study of world religions is a big deal. I remember my last study with my PhD was under the study of global religions. And in Edinburgh University, most of the universities have a department of the study of world religions today. And it's very important because it's developed to allow people of different faiths to speak for themselves and in their own terms. Just as there are similarities between world religions, there are also definite differences. Let me put it to you with a rather maybe inappropriate illustration, but I'll do it anyway. Can we put the next picture up? Is that okay? If you want to spend £25,000 on a car, you might not agree with me. This is the car I've got. I've got a slightly older version of what you see there. You could take my Dacia for £25,000, no problem at all, because you want to buy a car, but I say all cars are basically the same. All cars have four tires, an engine, they've got seats for passengers, and they've got a radio. They get you from place to place. So it doesn't really matter if you buy a Mercedes or you buy my Dacia. Now, some of you might be looking at me and saying, Calvert, I don't believe you. And I say, if you don't accept this logic for something as temporal as a car, which is of little value in 20 years' time, why would we accept this same kind of logic for religion, which determines what will happen to us in all eternity? By the way, if any of you do accept this kind of logic, I'll be glad to take your £25,000 for my car after the service. When we shop for cars, we don't look at the surface similarities, but we look at the differences, don't we? There's a huge difference between my car and a Mercedes. Even though they're both cars with four wheels, an engine, lights, seats, and a radio. It's the same for religions. Their contents are very different. We cannot honestly say that all religions are the same because even a surface investigation, and that's why we need centers of study of world religions, even a surface investigation shows the content of these religions to be different. Christianity, for example, teaches that God forgives a person and offers supernatural help. In Buddhism and Hinduism, there is no forgiveness, only the ruthless karma and no supernatural aid. The goal of Buddhism is nirvana, which is complete cessation of both desire and personality. We Christians look forward to a new resurrection body and eternity with God in heaven. Islam denies that Allah ever reveals himself to humanity. He reveals only his will. And the proper response is simply submission, which is what actually Islam means, the word submission. In Christianity, God not only reveals his will, but also his person. He even came to earth in the person of Jesus. In Hinduism, the divine is impersonal, but can be approached through an endless number of gods and idols. In Zoroastrianism, there's a good God and an evil God. In Buddhism, there is no God. In Islam, there is one God, but no Son of God. Christianity insists that there is just one God, but in three persons, God, Son, and Holy Spirit. Today, we even read how Jesus said to his disciples, "I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to help you and be with you forever, the Spirit of Truth." You see that? You've got Jesus as the Son, speaking about the Father, and speaking about the Holy Spirit, three in one. Jesus also said that he was the unique way to God. We read again this morning his words to the disciples, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and you've seen him." So last week, I ended our sermon by ending with a comparison between Christian faith and Islam and Buddhism. To those who think all religions are the same, I want to suggest that Christianity is different from other faiths in particularly two areas. This is what separates Christianity from all other faiths. The first thing is that every religion teaches us to earn our way to God. Christianity is the only religion that teaches that God came to us. Romans chapter 5 verse 8 is a fantastic and amazing statement. It says, "God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, God died for us." You could paraphrase that and say, when we weren't interested, God was interested and came to us. Jesus died for us before we did a thing for him. God didn't wait to get things right before he sent his son to die. But if you look in other religions, you find a system of rules that are there to satisfy a God in most other religions. Whereas in Christianity, it's about a relationship with God. Other religions give us a list of things to do and not to do. Interestingly, just this last 2 months, we've been looking at the commandments in the midweek service. And we've been looking at them not as a basis of satisfying God, but a picture of God's character. And last Wednesday, we had a convinced Sunni Syrian woman coming in just to find out what Christians believe about the commandments. Some religions call these rules, laws or pillars. These are the things that you do in the hope of getting into heaven. It's different with Christianity. And another thing that is very different, and probably important to emphasize today, is that no other religion has an empty tomb. We're the only people who follow a leader who died and came back again to life. Every other major religious leader is dead. Jesus Christ's tomb was empty. The body gone, and his frightened followers transformed because they discovered that their master was alive. I remember many years ago, generations ago now, Muhammad Ali, who became a boxing champion of the world, once quoted as saying, "If only someone could come back from the dead and tell me how nice it was, I would believe." He did. Jesus' life was one of humility, and yet he spoke with authority and clarity. And to find such a humble person saying the sort of things which Jesus claimed for himself is puzzling, even shocking. Among founders of world religions, Jesus alone spoke in this way. Muhammad and the Buddha claimed to be messengers of truth. Muhammad was the prophet of God, and Gautama became the enlightened one, which literally means Buddha. They felt that they had a deeper insight into the truth than other people. But Jesus claimed to be the very source and focus of truth. So you think, if Jesus is the great teacher, then I must believe what he said about himself. If not, then I must conclude that he's either completely deluded or he's trying to deceive me. Buddha was a good and a great man. Muhammad was a dynamic leader. Confucius was a very wise teacher. But if we look at the life and teaching of Jesus, we can't just say that he was a very good man. Either Jesus was of God or he wasn't. If he was of God, then he could be the Son of God. But if he wasn't, then he was either mad or bad. The fact is that only a handful of people have created great movement, that have created great movements of faith, have made a decisive impact on the world of history. We think of the other founders of world religions and just compare them, compare their age and compare when they died. Confucius, the great Chinese man of faith and religion, the teacher, died at the age of 72 in 479 BC. Very close to that time, Gautama the Buddha died at the age of 80. Much later, and I'm looking at now Muhammad, the founder of Islam, died after the life of Jesus at the age of 62. And Karl Marx, the mind behind communism, I'm using that as a kind of religion. I think it's appropriate to do that because it involved a whole way of life. Died at the age of 64, not so long ago. But what about Jesus Christ, the founder of Christianity? Look at the difference. Jesus died at 33. After only 3 years in the public eye, leaving no writings, only a few dispirited followers. But his impact on history can be seen in the way that we base our whole calendar on his life. And his demoralized disciples turned the world upside down. What happened to them? See, I think this very psychological difference that happened in his demoralized disciples is what persuades many doubters that Jesus did rise from the dead and that he's alive today. His spirit is in the world. Hans Küng, who was a great theologian of faiths, said this. He said, "None of the great founders of religions lived in so restricted an area. None lived for such a terribly short time. None died so young. And yet, how great his influence has been. Numerically, Christianity is well ahead of all world religions." Seems to me that the more we dig into these statements, and we haven't got much time to do it today, but the more that we dig into the differences in religions and the challenges, the more we try to understand why our Christian message is called the gospel, then we begin to see that God is personal, that God is alive. We see the meaning of the word gospel. It's good news. And the good news is that God has revealed himself clearly through Jesus Christ, and that he is alive today by his Spirit. In Rotterdam, I'm going to close with this. In Rotterdam, I have a friend called Pastor Eric. He's the Urdu-speaking pastor of a congregation that speaks about 4 or 5 languages. When I take students to his church every other year, he meets the students, and he describes some of the people in his church as unofficial members. And once one of the students asked him, "What do you mean these people are unofficial members?" He says, "They are really my sisters. They come from the same region of the Punjab as the rest of us in the church. But they go along to the local mosque. And culturally, in the way they dress and the way they behave, they're Muslims. But they're really followers of Christ because they love Jesus. They read the Bible with us together." Isn't that exciting? You can have a way of culturally behaving that's different from your faith alignment. I think when we talk with people today, we have to be gentle and respect people's background and people's faith. And our hope must be that they will come to know Jesus as their friend as well. For Christ is all that we need. He's the sure way to knowing God.